The pool was huge and full of chemically treated waters in which swam the larger aliens. In its heyday, it would have taken 1,000 human bathers to fill the pool, but now it held barely 100 large and languorous forms. The steam in the water hid most of their details, for which the humans were frankly grateful. The aliens were large bluish-gray shapes, bulbous and undulating, with long barbed tentacles and rows of great staring eyes. They could never have appeared at Parliament, except as hollows. Other aliens shared the waters, drifting slowly here and there, and rising up to study their visitors. There were scales and carapaces and slick furs, limbs and tails and protuberances that made no sense at all. Down at the bottom of the pool floated great flowering masses with exaggerated sense organs and trailing roots. All the aliens who could tolerate Logris's gravity, only if their weight was to some extent supported by the water, were in the pool. More species stood watching on the marble floor around the pool. Some humanoid, some reptiloid, some fungal. All of them glistening wetly from the steam. And a few shapes, so frankly nightmarish, even Douglas couldn't stand to look at them for long. Some held edged weapons. Some carried energy, along with a sprinkling of devices that Douglas couldn't even recognize. For a long time, the humans and the aliens just stood and looked at each other.
Yes. I have never felt so unwelcome in my life, and I've been around.
You are our guests.
A roughly humanoid shape moved forward through the steam to stand before them. It was covered in overlapping silver scales, like a body armor, even the elongated head. Crimson eyes burned balefully behind the silver helm.
I am Tatka of the Magra. I speak for the community. Which one of you is King Douglas?
That would be me. Nice place you have here. Very moist. Ingenious use of the pool to help with gravity.
The steam helps too. We pump it full of the elements necessary for our survival. But we cannot speak of what it will do to your lungs.
It's all right. We're not staying.
I was once king, but Finn stole my throne. Now I am a hunted fugitive, like you.
Not quite like us, human king. You can at least leave this place and walk the city. We are trapped here. Once, many of us made up the various alien embassy staffs. We were proud to come here, to Logris, to be part of the great adventure of Empire. We believed we had immunity and protection. Instead, we were hunted down like animals, and those unlucky enough to be caught were butchered and then eaten or displayed as trophies.
I'm sure he'd like to do the same to me, if he could. We have a common enemy. I'm here to suggest an alliance against him.
One of the great shapes lurched half up out of the water. The creature fell back again. Water surged up over the side of the pool and soaked the legs of the humans. They stood their ground. They knew they couldn't afford to appear weak.
He says, what use can we be? Many of us are dying from lack of food and proper trace elements, from your oppressive gravity, from the accumulating effects of a hostile environment, and some are simply withering, so far from home or hope or sanity. Most of the support tech designed to maintain us here had to be abandoned when we fled our embassies. Why have you come to us, human king? You have your own people to fight your battles. Most of us couldn't survive outside these walls.
I'm here because you are my people too, and I won't abandon you. This is your rebellion as much as ours. Finn must be brought down, and the old order returned. And for that, I'm going to need all the help I can get. Nina? Nina!
Oh, yes?
Nina tore her gaze away from the long, crooked shape moving slowly across the ceiling, leaving a shiny trail behind it, and concentrated on Tatchkra.
Yes. Oh, I'm setting up a rogue news channel and communication site. I'm pretty sure we could punch brief messages through to your home planets. Could they send reinforcements or other help?
No. The last reports our embassies received told of human ships quarantining our planets. No one allowed off-world. And there is the constant threat of the transmutation engines. We dare not move openly until Finn's power has been clearly broken. We have learned to be a practical, paranoid people through our contact with humanity.
Don't blame us all for Finn's actions. I don't think he's human anymore. If he ever was.
Fight beside us. Set an example for your peoples to follow. Take revenge for what has been done to you. After all, what have you got to lose? Whatever happens in the rebellion, it's got to be better than hiding out here and dying by inches.
True. Our life here is not so precious that we are keen to prolong it. But neither will we throw our lives away to no good purpose. We remember you, King Douglas. You swore to protect us. You failed. Why should we listen to you now?
Back then, I couldn't even protect myself. I was just a man on a throne, betrayed by the people I had every reason to trust. Things are different now. I have a cause and an army. And you can be a part of that. Revenge can soothe many an old hurt.
The alien studied him for a long moment with its unreadable silver face, and then it turned away to talk with the others, in the pool and out. Eventually, Tachkra turned back to face the humans.
Even if we were willing to fight, what help could we be when most of us couldn't survive in your environment?
Douglas nodded thoughtfully, but inside, he was grinning broadly. He had them, even if they didn't know it yet. They'd stopped asking why and moved on to how.
There is much you can do. There are many places you can go that humans cannot. Service tunnels, sewer access points, waste disposal outlets, and all the other places humans can't survive without heavy tech support. And there are people here in the Rookery who can build you whatever tech support you need to move around freely. You supply the plans, they'll supply the tech. There are people here who can build anything, especially if it's illegal. So what do you say? Are you with us?
There are many species here. We do not all share the same goals, ways, or even the same concepts. Some of us are as alien to each other as we are to you. But we will discuss the matter. Many of us understand or have learned the need for revenge. I think when the discussion is over, we will follow you, King Douglas.
There wasn't really much left to say after that, so Douglas bowed courteously to Tachkra, and then to the pool, and led his people back out of the baths.
I swear, I will never eat seafood again.
The great Esper Diana Virtue, once known as Jenny Psycho, once dead but now alive again, strode through the streets of the Parade of the Endless as though she owned them, heading for the Rookery. She was broadcasting a powerful telepathic aversion meme, so that everyone else looked everywhere except at her. She passed a gaggle of church militant peacekeepers with malice in their eyes, bored and looking for trouble, and Diana was tempted to do something hilariously appalling to them, but decided reluctantly not to. She didn't want to attract attention. Not yet, anyway. The city wasn't how she remembered it at all, and she didn't care for the feel of the streets. There was an overlying pall of gloom, fear, pain, and repression, leaking from a million untutored minds. And yet, there was more to it than that. Diana stopped by the Victory Gardens to stand before the statues and graves of Jack Random and Ruby Journey. The statues didn't look much like the people she remembered, but she was used to that. The few representations she'd seen of herself had been nothing short of laughable. She'd never had that big a bust in her life. It had been a long time since she and Jack and Ruby had boarded the old Death Stalker Standing, the ancient stone castle that was also a starship, to go into one last desperate battle against the armies of Shub, and then the massed forces of the Recreated. It had also been a long time since she'd found them lying together, stone-cold dead on the cold stone floor, side by side, as they had been in life. Forensic evidence suggested they'd murdered each other, but Diana Virtue suppressed that. The people didn't need to know everything about their heroes. She smiled briefly. She'd never thought she'd miss the blustering old rogue and the cold-hearted bounty hunter, but they had both done amazing things in their time. People these days seemed smaller somehow, less colorful. She concentrated, and a rain of rose petals fell silently upon the statues. And then she looked around sharply as her open mind seemed to catch an echo of an old familiar presence, a sense of power upon the air, not long ago at all.
Owen?
But of course there was no reply. Owen Deathstalker had been dead and gone these past 200 years, and the Empire was a lesser place because of it. She'd always admired the Deathstalker, with his honor and his courage and his dry, sardonic wit. She never told him that, of course. She didn't want him to get big-headed. But after he was gone, she wished she could have just sat down with him once and talked. She liked to think they would have had a lot in common. She missed him, but then, so did everyone. She could still remember the powerful and human voice coming from everywhere and nowhere to tell them all that Owen Deathstalker was dead. Dead like Jack and Ruby. Hardened soldiers who'd taken everything Shub could throw at them and never once flinched had stood around her crying their hearts out for the loss of the one man they'd all revered. The one who'd been the best of them all. He'd made the rebellion possible. He'd made winning possible. Even though he'd always known heroes died young and bloody and far from home. And yet, his presence seemed to permeate the Victory Gardens, even though he had no grave there. He had been here, and recently. She knew it like she knew her own name. She grinned briefly, her heart rising. She'd found a way back from the dead. Maybe he had too. The Deathstalker had always been one for pulling a miracle out of the hat at the last possible moment. She left the Victory Gardens and headed for the Rookery again, and her heart and her step were a lot lighter. She felt better about the day and her mission. She was going to hook up with Douglas Campbell and lead him back to greatness. He needed her, even if he didn't know it yet. The overpowering pressure of the city's oppressed mind still hung about her like a dark cloud, but Diana Virtue was learning to see through it. Touched and transformed by the Mater Mundi, in her time she had been one of the most powerful Esper minds living, and now that she was back, her strength was rapidly returning. Strange lights glowed in her mind like paper lanterns with horrible faces. The Elves, abroad in the long night of the soul. Elf had been a proud name in her time, a force for justice, and Diana hated these new Elves all the more for making the name an obscenity. She could sense thralls everywhere, human minds suppressed and silently screaming, so the Elves could run their bodies from a distance. She'd expected that, but the sheer numbers staggered her. She was pretty sure the Emperor Finn didn't know there were this many thralls in his capital city. Maybe she should send him a note. It was clear she'd come back from the dead, not a moment too soon. The Elves were spreading their influence and growing in power. The more people they could control and drain, the more powerful their minds became. Diana had to wonder if Finn knew that as well. She increased the power of her mental shields, just in case. It wouldn't do to have the enemy know she was back, just yet. She paused by the window of a store and studied the display of vidscreens interestedly as the regular, approved by Finn, news channel was shouldered aside by a rogue news broadcast from the Rookery. Nina Malapert's beaming face replaced the meaningless smile of the regular newscaster, and her voice rang out clear and happy and entirely unworried, like a breath of fresh air in a slaughterhouse.
Hello again, sweeties! It's Nina Malapert, back again, the voice and face of the Cumann Rebellion. Guess what? King Douglas is back, and boy is he ever mad at Finn! Right now, the true king is putting together an army that's going to drag that so-called emperor off his stolen throne, and he wants you to know that things are going to start happening very soon now. Expect open displays of sedition, rebellion, and just plain crankiness all over Logris, and especially in the Parade of the Endless. The rebellion is underway. That's official, and you heard it here first. And now, here's a whole bunch of news stories that Finn and his creatures don't want you to know about. On Madraguta, all elected officials have been replaced with appointed cronies of our malignant emperor.
There then followed a long series of news stories about things that Finn had ordered done or was planning to have done, most of which were supposed to be strictly secret. Some of them even surprised Diana. More stories followed about all the things that were going wrong because Finn couldn't be bothered with everyday problems, so his people didn't care either. And even more stories about the foul-ups and general ineptitude of Finn's rule.
We're sorry. We are experiencing technical difficulties. Service will be resumed shortly. Please stand by.
It was good to know Douglas Campbell had finally got off his regal arse and was back in action again. She'd been wondering whether she'd have to jumpstart his motivation for him, and some of the ideas she'd come up with had been particularly unpleasant. But then, as Diana Virtue or Jenny Psycho, she'd never hesitated to do the necessary thing, no matter how distasteful or who might get hurt, including herself. She had learned her lessons well in the old Empire torture cells of Silo 9, also known as Wormboy Hell. The rebellion needed a figurehead, and she'd always known it couldn't be her. She might be an official legend, but people needed a leader they could feel comfortable around, and preferably one who didn't have the word psycho as part of her name. No one ever doubted her abilities as a fighter, but she'd be the first to admit she'd never been a people person. No, Douglas would do fine, with the right backup and guidance. She strode confidently over the border and into the rookery, and the church militant guards on duty didn't even try to stop her. She dropped her aversion meme to allow herself to be seen, and her power crackled on the air around her. The guards couldn't run away fast enough. Some were even crossing themselves as they ran.
Oh, shit!
Quite a few innocent citizens also took to their heels on both sides of the border. Diana Virtue smiled. It was good to know she could still make an impression. She stopped and looked around her. She needed to make a different kind of impression now. Something dramatic to announce the return of an old legend. It took her only a moment to reach out with her mind and find a thrall, a nondescript little man lurking inconspicuously in a doorway. Diana walked right up to him, froze his legs when he tried to run, and then blasted the possessing Esper right out of the thrall's mind. The no longer possessed man fell forward onto his knees. Diana had no time for that. More thralls were coming. She could feel them all around her, their thoughts buzzing like angry wasps from a disturbed nest. There were lots and lots of them, heading right for her. Diana smiled. She was just in the mood for a good workout. Possessed men and women came running at her from all directions, their faces twisted with rage and passions of the possessing minds. Some had edged weapons, some had only their bare hands, but they all had murder on their elf minds. Diana Virtue was their oldest enemy, and they would stop at nothing to kill her again. They pushed other people out of their way, striking up blindly, their gaze fixed on Diana as she stood before them, smiling calmly. She waited till they were almost upon her, and then summoned up her power. Psionic energy surged and crackled in the street around her, and her presence flowered like a rose made up of thorns. She was Diana Virtue, Jenny Psycho, the first human Uber Esper. She had touched the minds of the AIs of Shub and brought them back to sanity. She fought the recreated to a standstill. She had been betrayed and murdered, lived on in the Oversoul, and now was back again to deal with unfinished business. Let the thralls come. Let them all come. She was Diana Virtue, her time come around again. And she would show these miserable new elves what power really was. The thralls came charging down the street and boiled out of the side alleys to surround her. Diana Virtue gathered up her power.
What?
And then stopped, astonished, as a dozen young women in brightly colored silks appeared out of nowhere. They materialized in a protective circle around Diana, They wore black roses in their hair and tribal patterns painted on their faces. They struck the same impressive pose and glared haughtily at the stunned thralls. They gestured grandly, and a psi-storm of exploding energies roared up and down the street, picking up thralls and throwing them away, tossing the helpless bodies around like rag dolls. The elf minds could not stand against the power of the newcomers. The 12 women gestured almost contemptuously, and the possessing minds were thrust out of their stolen bodies and sent howling off into the night. The psi-storm slowly abated, and the air grew settled again. Up and down the long street, over 100 men and women were free at last. The air had that clean, focused feeling that follows a thunderstorm. The 12 young women turned as one to face Diana Virtue. They were all grinning broadly and looking very pleased with themselves. Diana nodded slowly.
All right, I'm officially impressed. Now who the hell are you?
One of the women stepped forward.
I am Alessandra Duquesne, and we are the Psycho Sluts. Defenders of the right, avengers of the downtrodden, and ass-kickers supreme. We modeled ourselves on your legend and swore to do your name honor by performing feats of great glory.
Yes, I've heard of you. Headstrong young troublemakers, too impulsive to follow the ways of the Oversoul, and far too powerful for your own good. I thought you all left with new hope in the Icarus working, and were on your way to Mistworld.
The Psycho Sluts exchanged smug glances.
We never really got along with the Oversoul. We were always far too individual and proud of it to settle comfortably into the mass mind. We left the Oversoul to come to the Rookery just before New Hope headed off into orbit and exile. We wanted to stay and fight. There's always been a rogue Esper presence here. Minds too crooked or strange for the mass mind. We fit in just fine. We earn our keep sniffing out thralls and blasting them free. But we've never seen so many in one place before. They really do want you dead, don't they?
What do you want with me?
The Psycho Sluts looked at each other, caught off guard.
Well, we want to be your army. We always worshipped your memory, your take-no-prisoners, kill-them-all-and-let-God-sort-them-out policy towards the bad guys. And once we learned you were back in the flesh, we've been waiting for you to come here. We want to work with you to spread terror and destruction in your name. The rebellion starts here! Well, actually, it's already started. And Douglas Campbell is leading it. But of course, now that you're back...
No. The Campbell is king. He leads. I came here to support him. And if you want to work with me, so will you.
The Psycho Sluts considered this, and then shrugged, pretty much in unison. Diana looked from one eager young face to another. Had she ever been this young, this gung-ho? She wasn't at all sure she needed or wanted the support of a bunch of wannabe loose cannons, but they'd probably do less damage to the cause in the long run if she kept them where she could keep an eye on them. So it seemed she had her own personal army, whether she wanted one or not. She wondered fleetingly if Owen ever had to cope with problems like this. Still, she was glad she had something to bring to Douglas, apart from her own rather controversial legend.
Hey, we know where there are more thralls. Let's kick some more elf butt before we go to see Douglas.
Yes, the more people we can free from elf possession, the better.
That too.
And so, Diana and her newfound friends the Psycho Sluts went, eventually, to meet with King Douglas and his people. He wasn't an easy man to get to see these days, and Diana had to perform a few minor miracles and wonders to get her due attention. But once people realized she really was who she said she was, they couldn't pass her on fast enough. Just as well. No one stopped Diana Virtue when she was on a roll. Douglas, Stuart, and Nina met with her in their hotel room, which had somehow become the center of rebel operations, despite its cramped size. The Psycho Sluts stood guard outside the door, putting the wind up the regular guards. Everyone had heard of the Psycho Sluts, who, when they really got going, could cause more property damage than an earthquake. There was talk of getting up a collection to send them to help out another planet. Any other planet. Diana studied the three dubious faces sitting on the opposite side of the table and smiled easily.
Hi, I'm Diana Virtue, and you need my help.
Yes, when Jenny Psycho appears on the scene, people usually do.
I haven't used that name in well over a century, and if you're wise, you won't either. In case you didn't know it, this whole area is infested with thralls, reporting everything you do to the Emperor. You don't have strong enough Esper minds here to detect them, let alone deal with them. So, you need me.
Douglas nodded slowly.
And those awful young ladies currently lurking outside on the landing?
They call themselves the Psycho Sluts in honor of me. And no, I didn't get a say in the matter. They're rogue espers. They mean well.
Psycho Sluts? Doesn't the name alone just inspire confidence?
All the legends who could have returned to back me up and I had to get Jenny psycho. No offense, Diana. Tell you what, I've got to address an important rally in about an hour. Why don't you and your people tag along? And if you spot any thralls in the crowd, show me what you can do. All right?
The look on Diana's face made it clear it wasn't all right in any shape or form, but she nodded briefly. Even legends had to prove themselves. She waited down in the lobby with the psycho sluts, who amused themselves playing rat croquet with their psychokinesis, until it was time for Douglas and his people to go to the rally. The psycho sluts nodded cheerfully to Douglas, who did his best to avoid their eye. They worried him. They moved to form a protective circle around him as they walked through the streets. People gathered along the way to cheer and wave, and Douglas smiled and waved royally back to them. Stuart watched the crowds warily, one hand always near his gun. Nina filmed it all with her floating camera for later broadcast. Diana ignored the surroundings, conserving her strength. She knew the real trouble would start at the rally, where the elves could do the most damage. The rally was being held in an open square, and a large crowd had gathered there to listen to Douglas Campbell. The psycho sluts opened up a corridor through the crowd for Douglas to make his entrance, and he strode briskly through and leapt up onto the simple wooden stage. Douglas stood proudly before them, looking every inch the king in exile. He didn't even wait for the cheers to die away before getting stuck in.
I'm glad you all could make it! I'm here to tell you what you know in your hearts already.
He spoke well and fluently, haranguing the crowd and raising their spirits, inciting them to rebellion. He could talk of the poverty and harshness of the rookery, because he'd known them himself. And he could talk of the Emperor's treachery and evil, because he'd known them too. His speech might not have had the ease and polish that Anne Barclay's writing would have given it, but no one doubted that everything he said came from the heart. They had to fight back, he said. They had to rebel, because things were only going to get worse, because already far too many people were suffering unjustly, because it was their duty and their right.
And when your back's to the wall, there's nowhere to go but forward!
The psycho sluts stood arrayed before and around the stage, defying anyone to get past them, while Diana moved unobtrusively through the crowd, quietly noting the location of each and every thrall, without letting them know they'd been spotted. They were gradually infiltrating the crowd in ones and twos, smiling and applauding so as not to seem out of place, but someone else looked out through their cold eyes. When they thought there were enough of them, they began interrupting Douglas's speech.
You're feeding us a prime lord of bullshit!
The crowd around them shifted uneasily, angry but not yet ready to act themselves. They looked to Douglas to see what he would do.
And from the looks of it, you're quite the connoisseur. Now, as I was saying...
Douglas had suffered far worse harassment in Parliament. The thralls fell silent, linked minds, and catching everyone by surprise, lashed out with a combined telepathic onslaught. The crowd staggered back and forth, clutching at their heads as a razor storm of unbearable thoughts roared in their minds. Vile sights and sensations overpowered their senses, plunging them into hell. And the elves enjoyed every moment of it. A group of thralls nearest the stage seized the opportunity to attack Douglas directly, under cover of the confusion. They lunged at him with drawn swords, but Diana had seen enough. She lashed out with her mind, blanketing the whole square. And the telepathic attack shut off abruptly as every single thrall collapsed as one. The crowd quickly returned to normal and looked around for their savior. Douglas grinned down at Diana from the stage.
All right, you're hired.
Oh, God damn it.
The Emperor Finn Durandal was not at all happy about being roused from his sleep at such an early hour of the morning, but since the only people who had this particular private comm number were the elf leaders, he supposed he'd better answer it. Somehow he just knew it wasn't going to be good news.
This had better be important.
The scowling face on the screen was unknown to him, but he expected that. The elf leaders never showed their true faces. They only ever spoke through their thralls. Even after all this time, Finn had no idea who the elf leaders really were, one of the many things that had been bothering him lately. The possessed face on the screen looked distinctly upset, which pleased Finn somewhat. If he wasn't having a good time, no one else should either.
We have been attacked! A psychic assault of incredible power! Many of our people are still recovering.
Who the hell could do that to you?
Diana Virtue has appeared in the rookery.
That's a good trick, considering she's been dead for over a century.
That doesn't mean anything where she's concerned. She was an avatar of the Matamundi, and even the Uber Espers were scared of that force. Diana Virtue is back, and she has sided with the Campbell. You should have let us kill him long ago.
Possibly, but I did so want him to suffer first. Very well. Kill him, if it'll make you happy.
We can't! He is protected by Diana Virtue and her army of rogue espers. Already they have cost us hundreds of thralls. Our presence in the rookery has been almost wiped out. You have to do something!
I am doing something. I never thought you and your thralls would be enough to stop Douglas from putting together a rebellion once he came out of his sulk. He always did have a way with words, along with that damn charismatic personality of his. So I've been preparing my own little army to fight specifically in the rookery. I always knew I'd have to deal with the ungrateful little bastard someday. The rookery has finally become too dangerous to be allowed to exist. I've been reluctant to sign their death warrant, partly because there was always the chance that I'd need their special talents again someday, and partly because I'm a sentimental old softy. But get your remaining people out of the rookery. I'm going to send in my very best fanatics to cleanse the place with fire and steel. I will tear down the buildings and raise a mountain of skulls.
You'd better.
Fuck you. Ah, well.
He stood up and rang for his servants to come in and dress him. No point in trying to get back to sleep now. Not when he had slaughter and devastation to plan. He ordered a series of calls to his generals and the church militant. If he didn't sleep, no one else got to sleep either. Pure Humanity and the church militant had become one church and one philosophy, under the benevolent guidance of the very practical Joseph Wallace. The shock troops of the Empire now worshipped Finn directly, and natural selection among the faithful, bolstered by numerous purges, had produced an army of implacable zealots and fanatical soldiers. They would die for Finn, though of course they would much rather kill for him. He was the chosen one, the defender of humanity, their day and their night, and they were his attack dogs. There were thousands of them, armed to the teeth, their heads boiling with battle drugs and virulent propaganda. They were the righteous, and mercy and compassion and all such weaknesses were not in them. They gathered at the boundaries of the rookery, and then marched in by all the entryways at once, killing everyone they saw. They shot down men, women, and children, and cut down those who didn't run away fast enough. They set fires and planted explosives in buildings. Their lord had said that not one stone should remain standing upon another, and not one heathen soul should be left alive to see the coming day. They did not care or falter. They were doing God's work, and it felt fine. So fine. Men, women, and children lay dead and dying in the streets, and the church militant soldiers marched right over them. Anywhere else in the city, there would have been nothing but panic and people running blindly, but this was the rookery, and the people here were made of harder stuff. Word passed quickly of the invasion, and all too soon the church militant advance ground to a halt in the face of implacable opposition. Men, women, and children came running from all directions to block the invaders' way, all of them armed with some kind of weapon. More people gathered on the roofs to rain down debris on the enemy. There were snipers with energy guns at the higher windows, and fast-footed youths darted out of alleyways with improvised grenades. In the rookery, it was truly said, any man against his neighbor, but every man against the outsider. Douglas, Stuart, and Nina worked tirelessly through the endless hours of the morning, organizing the rebel forces, sending people to fight where they were most needed. Playing a virtue in the psycho slots struck the armed forces again and again, darting in and out in vicious hit-and-run tactics, leaving death and destruction in their wake. Even some of the aliens emerged onto the streets for a chance to strike back at their persecutors. The Rookery rose up, combined at last into a single great force with a single aim. The Emperor had made himself their enemy, a threat to their homes and their lives, and they would never rest again till they had brought him down. The people surged through the streets, throwing themselves at the invaders in wave after wave, the end result of generations of people who had had to fight for everything in their lives. Guns blazed and swords flashed, and the church militant soldiers fell in their dozens, and then in their hundreds, and finally in their thousands. The people of the Rookery came from everywhere at once to drag the fanatics down by sheer force of numbers. The Rookery rose up, savage and unrelenting, and all in a moment, the invasion became a rout. The church militants abandoned their weapons, their orders, and their faith in Finn and themselves, and in ragged groups they ran for the Rookery boundaries. Of the hundreds of thousands of proud and arrogant zealots who'd marched into the Rookery, only a few hundred made it out alive. Nina Malapert got a lot of it on film, and broadcast every bit of it on her Rogue News site, with the tech team using all their ingenuity to keep it on the air for as long as possible. All over Logris and on worlds across the Empire, people watched as Finn's authority was challenged and thrown back in his face. They saw the blood in the bodies and whole families slaughtered by the church militant troops. And then they watched as Douglas Campbell and Stuart Lennox fought back-to-back against impossible odds, and never had those two looked more like heroes. Finn's censors shut down the broadcast eventually, and there was nothing left but blank screens all across the Empire. In the Rookery, the people gathered up their dead, treated the wounded as best they could, and put out the fires. They didn't feel much like celebrating, but at least now there was no doubt over whose side they were on. They only stopped pursuing the troops at the boundaries because Douglas sent messages to call them back. He knew they weren't ready to go head-to-head with Finn's armies. Not yet. Hot tempers subsided into cold, bitter anger as the people of the Rookery counted their dead and added up the damage. And hard-hearted and harder-headed men and women, who had never come together for something as nebulous as a cause, now found themselves united in an aching hunger for revenge. And on worlds all across the Empire, and most especially on Logris, people regarded their blank view screens and looked at the Emperor Finn and his shock troops in a whole new way.
God damn it!
Finn was furious. He raged back and forth in his palace communication center after having tried to summon up more troops, but most of his armed forces were posted as occupation troops in cities all across Logris. It would take hours to bring them all to the Parade of the Endless, and then who would control the cities they left? Finn had attack sleds, battle wagons, and even star cruisers at his disposal, but again, it would take hours to call them in. Finn kicked out at the furniture and any of his staff who didn't get out of his way fast enough. He couldn't understand how it had all gone wrong so quickly, how a rabble of outcasts and criminals could have wiped out his elite troops so easily.
Douglas. It has to be Douglas.
Everyone out! Now!
After he drove everyone else out of the comm center, Finn called on the elves for help. A large enough army of thralls might yet save the day for him. Suicide troops, driven on by outside minds, could still overrun the Rookery's defenses. But none of the elf leaders or the uber-espers would take his calls. Finn sat down in the empty room, his thoughts whirling madly, unable to settle. For the first time in a long time, he wasn't the one driving events, and he didn't know what to do.
I must have missed something. But what? What?
In the end, after it had been quiet for too long, the comm staff sent for Joseph Wallace. He calmed everyone down as best he could, with soothing words and rousing platitudes, and then he stuck his head gingerly around the door of the comm center. Finn was still sitting in his chair thinking, ignoring flashing message lights on consoles all around him. Joseph decided this wasn't the moment to inform Finn that uprisings were breaking out on planets all across the Empire, inspired by what people had seen happening in the rookery. Joseph quietly began giving orders in Finn's name. Security people came and went, putting together a depressing picture of what was happening everywhere at once. Joseph authorized vicious reprisals and clampdowns, but as fast as rebellion was slapped down in one place, it sprang up in another. Alarms sounded in the comm center, but Finn turned them off. They made his head hurt, and he needed to think. If Finn had known what was going on with the elf leaders and the Uber Espers, he would have been even more disturbed. Behind the scenes, an even more bitter struggle was going on, with no quarter asked or given. The elf leaders and the Uber Espers had finally erupted into open war over who controlled the movement. Both sides had been secretly amassing great armies of thralls to feed their power and back their play, and after what had happened in the rookery, both sides had decided that the time had come to break free from Finn and go their own way. It was an Esper war, fought on mental battlegrounds, largely unnoticed by the rest of the world at first, but nonetheless vicious and deadly for all that. The huge thrall armies were living power sources, reservoirs of mental energy that both sides could tap into as they fought their war. Telepathic battles raged back and forth as minds clashed with minds on eerie and human landscapes created just for that purpose. Minds crashed and splintered, and Esper attacks sometimes spilled over into the material world in outbreaks of weird weather and probability fluctuations. Psi storms sleeted through the surrounding areas, destroying all unshielded minds in their paths. The two sides raged back and forth, neither strong enough to entirely overwhelm the other. But neither side would back down, and so the psionic pressure built and built until finally the energy spiraled entirely out of control and blew one whole section of the Parade of the Endless apart. The explosion was so loud and bright, the echoes could be felt all over Logris. Finn later blamed the explosion on rebel saboteurs, because he had to say something. The Esper battle ended in a stalemate, with neither side gaining or losing ground, and so both sides retreated to lick their psychic wounds and prepare for future battles. Both the elf leaders and the Uber Espers were determined to stand alone now and follow their own destiny. They didn't need Finn anymore. They would rule humanity on their own terms, and to hell with all alliances of convenience. Finn crushed the uprisings eventually. It cost him time and money and manpower, far more than he could afford, but he had no choice. He had to maintain control. Planet by planet, city by city, the rebellions were stamped out with gun and steel, and a slow, sullen silence fell across the Empire, every bit of it now under strict martial law. Rebel bodies hung from lampposts in their hundreds in every city, and heavily armed and armored troops walked the city streets, looking nervously over their shoulders. The rookery was strictly off limits. No one went in, and no one came out. Finn was more worried about the loss of his elf allies. None of them would talk to him anymore, and all his contacts seemed to have disappeared underground. He'd relied upon their support for too long. His spy organizations were lost without their telepathically gained intelligence. Finn told Joseph Wallace that production of S-blockers was now to have priority over everything else, but couldn't explain why. Unfortunately, it turned out you couldn't manufacture S-blockers without the required Esper brain tissues, and the cloning of Esper tissues had always had a high failure rate, so mass production was going to be a slow, time-consuming process. Joseph delivered that message over the comm from a safe distance. He still didn't entirely trust Finn's temper. The Emperor had other problems, too. He went to see Elijah Dukat in his new laboratory set within the palace. Finn had decided to keep his remaining allies close at hand, wherever possible. There was only one Dukat these days. The Elijahs had tried to assemble their own power base and a new clone underground, and Finn couldn't have that, so he personally shot all the Elijah Dukats except one. He neither knew nor cared whether the remaining Dukat was the original or not. It didn't really matter. Ostensibly, Finn was visiting Dukat to discuss the problems of cloning Esper brain tissues. But as always, Finn had an ulterior motive. The recent uprisings had demonstrated very clearly that he had a shortage of manpower, especially now that he didn't have the thralls to back him up any longer. He needed soldiers, armed men who would do what they were told without question. And he didn't have the time to find and train and indoctrinate them, So the obvious answer was an army of clones. To produce such an army would require a huge protein base, but luckily there was no shortage of dead bodies lying around, just waiting to be put to good use. And this new army would be programmed to know no fear and absolutely no independence. They wouldn't turn and run like those so-called zealots he'd sent into the rookery. Finn's blood still boiled at the thought of his men running from a bunch of outcasts and cheap grifters. He would have cheerfully called in his fleet and scorched the whole area from orbit, but there was no way of doing that without taking out the whole of the Parade of the Endless. He was still thinking about it, though. Finn expounded his plans for a new clone army at some length to the sole remaining and somewhat subdued Dukat. He strode up and down between the shining, brand-new equipment, his ideas growing more extravagant by the moment. Dukat just sat there, shaking his head slowly, until Finn told him to stop it. Dukat wrung his hands together in front of him to stop them from shaking.
To produce the number of clones you require on the timescale you propose presents us with certain difficulties that no amount of tech or funding will overcome. Your Majesty, the end product will almost certainly be damaged goods.
Be specific.
Well, Your Majesty, the end product will almost certainly have physical defects, including but not limited to a certain amount of brain damage.
Sounds like a plan to me. Soldiers too stupid to rebel and too dumb to do anything but follow orders. I can live with that. I'll take 2 million, to begin with. And use the cell samples I brought as the base for their genetic structure.
Well, whose cells are they?
Mine, of course. I have decided I want children. Lots and lots of them. Congratulate me! I'm going to be a father!
Finn's next visit was to another laboratory he'd had moved to the palace for security reasons. The owner hadn't wanted to move, but it's amazing how persuasive a gun pointed at the groin can be. And so, that renowned drug dealer, alchemist, and complete headcase, Dr. Happy, now worked exclusively for Finn, in a brand new lab with every convenience money could buy. Much to the sorrow of his many other customers. It had to be said that Dr. Happy wasn't entirely the man he'd once been before his long sojourn on Hayden in the proximity of the Madness Maze, but there was no denying he still possessed the most unique scientific mind in the Empire. And these days, the good doctor labored tirelessly on a single project, the rebuilding of Anne Barkley. Anne had been very nearly killed by the wreckage that fell on her during Douglas Campbell's daring escape through the roof of the court. Anyone else probably would have died, given how long it took to get her to a regeneration tank. But the tank kept her hovering on the edge of death, while Dr. Happy turned his twisted mind to the problem. Finn had instructed Dr. Happy to go to any lengths to save Anne, so that was exactly what he did. What he could not cure or repair, he replaced or rebuilt, no matter how extreme the measures necessary. He worked wonders, pulling Anne back from the brink of the grave again and again, but unfortunately, he couldn't resist the impulse to recreate her in amusing ways. The good doctor had been influenced by his prolonged proximity to the Madness Maze, and it showed in his work. He had also taken to using himself as a test subject for all the new drugs he developed, on the grounds that the only way to fully understand the effects was to experience them firsthand. One of the drugs killed him, another brought him back, or so he said. Either way, the end result was that Dr. Happy was now a walking, rotting corpse, within which his slowly decaying, brilliant mind misfired from time to time. Implanted tech from dubious sources and a whole series of experimental new drugs kept him going, but his flesh continued to slowly mummify, despite all his best efforts to rejuvenate it. Dr. Happy didn't care. He savored the sensations of decay through preternaturally sharpened senses and boasted that his new outlook on life, or rather death, gave him all kinds of new insights. The sight that greeted Finn as he entered the heavily guarded laboratory would have shaken and sickened anyone else. Gone were the days of shining new tech and pristine equipment. The shadowed chamber was packed with animal cages and stank like a slaughterhouse. Experimental animals peered dolefully from the cages, while others lay scattered across the lab tables in various states of completion. Dr. Happy had been taking them apart and putting them back together in interesting new combinations to see what would happen. Mostly they died, but he said he was learning a lot in the process. Finn strode unhurriedly through the lab, peering dubiously at the latest assemblies pinned to the tables, and then looked up as Dr. Happy came tottering forward to greet him. The good doctor wore nothing but his chemical-stained lab coat over his emaciated, rotting body. Dark blotches covered the gray skin, and occasionally pale glimpses of bone showed through. Most of his white hair had fallen out, his sunken eyes were as yellow as urine, and his lips had drawn back from his teeth, turning his permanent smile into a rictus. He moved in sudden darting flurries, never still for a moment, filled with some terrible, remorseless energy.
Oh, so good to see you again, Finn. Oh, yes, yes. Oh, happy day. We're making progress here. Definitely making progress.
Don't look at the rabbit. I never expected it to work.
The other head was just a whim. Yes. Oh, you've come to see Anne, I presume. Yes, yes, I know. No time for chat. I see ghosts, you know.
Finn paused and looked at Dr. Happy. This was a new turn.
Ghosts?
Oh, yes. Spirits of the dead. Restless souls of the departed. That sort of thing.
Dr. Happy spun around in a circle, flapping his bony hands as though shooing things away.
They're always floating around the lab, getting in the way, pestering me when I have better things to do.
He looked fixedly at nothing for a long moment, his head cocked on one side.
Hey, they're quiet for the moment. I think you frightened them. I'm pretty sure some of them are people I came back from Hayden with. You remember?
The crew of the Hunter and the scientists of Hayden. The people you poisoned and drove insane.
Well, it's not my fault they weren't strong enough to tolerate the miracles I fed them. I would have made them superhuman if they hadn't all died on me. People have no stamina these days. I blame late toilet training myself. You don't think they blame me for their death, do you? How very unfair. Oh, but you're here to see Anne, aren't you? Oh, come and see, come and see. Oh, I've made such marvelous progress since you were last here. You won't recognize the old girl.
That had better not be true, for your sake.
Dr. Happy had already lurched away and was pottering about his lab. He was heading towards the living quarters at the back, but he kept being distracted by various chemical distillations and computer displays. He gave his gene splicer an encouraging pat in passing and beckoned imperiously for Finn to follow him. Finn did so. The line between genius and madness was thin enough at the best of times, and being dead probably didn't help. He followed Dr. Happy on his erratic journey. Dr. Happy whirled around abruptly to face Finn.
Whoa! Now this is interesting. This spirit claims to be you, come back in time from the future, after you died. I'd probably be able to understand him better if he didn't have his head under his arm.
Finn made a mental note to get as much work out of Dr. Happy as he could while he still lasted.
How are you getting on with your new version of the Deathstalker boost?
All right, no need to shout. I'm dead, not deaf. The ears are still attached, see? And the boost is going very well, thank you. I've already produced a viable prototype and given it to Anne.
You've done what? I told you I wanted to test it myself first.
Well, there was no time. Anne needed my boost if she was going to hold together. You have to remember, most of what I've done to her is extremely experimental. No one else could have kept her alive as long as I. I've used old Haydenman tech, Wampir tech, and even some new options that came to me during my time with the maze. I had no choice but to make her into a cyborg after the appalling damage she suffered. I have to admit, I'm not always sure how or even why some of it works, but we learn by doing, after all. Still, tech implants, miracle potions, and my loving care can only do so much. Often, the very things that keep her alive are at war with each other in her poor, abused body. The boost should make all the difference. I have the highest hopes for it. Oh, come and see! Come and see!
He pottered off again, and Finn followed him to the back of the lab. The living quarters were kept separate from the rest of the lab by a single door of solid steel. It was kept locked at all times, as much to keep Anne in as everyone else out.
Dr. Happy.
Beyond the door lay a comfortable enough room with every amenity, but no windows. Anne was standing before the full-length mirror again, studying herself. Her new self, or what had been done to it in the name of survival. Finn had offered to remove the mirror on the grounds that it only upset her, but Anne had wrecked the room in protest, even denting the steel door, so he never mentioned it again. Anne stood awkwardly. She was still learning how to walk and move smoothly in her new altered form. She wore no clothing, so she could see herself more clearly. Tech implants bulged crudely out of her flushed pink skin, thrusting out sharp and curved edges. One arm was longer than the other, and the power unit in her back gave her a slight hunched look. Her body bulged in the wrong places, to contain everything that had been put into it. Long, raised edges of scar tissue trailed paths all over her body, like the map of a new route into hell. She moved jerkily without grace, and often her hands broke things without meaning to. Sometimes she broke them deliberately, out of rage and frustration. Her hair had grown out gray from the stress, and her face was gaunt and tired. Her eyes had the golden gleam of the Hayden man. She didn't look away from the mirror reflection when Finn entered, but when she spoke, it was for him.
I was beautiful for such a short time. I wish I'd enjoyed it more. Still, at least now the outside finally matches the inside.
You've been brooding again, haven't you? What have I told you about that? You have nothing to blame yourself for. Besides, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Anne tried something like a smile.
It takes one monster to appreciate another. There's something new in me now, isn't there?
Yes, it's a variant on the old Deathstalker boost. It will make you stronger, faster, and hopefully a little more stable.
Anne turned with awkward suddenness to face him.
Yes, I can feel it. Like lightning in my veins. I feel strong. I could probably knock down that stupid door of yours now, if I wanted. But where would I go? I don't sleep anymore, you know. I don't need to. Just as well, really. I had bad dreams.
You're alive? I promised you I wouldn't let you die.
My boost is actually an improvement on what the original was supposed to be.
Dr. Happy tottered in circles around Anne and ran his stiff fingers over the tech eruptions in her body.
Oh, my boost is a continual thing, never stopping. You will never lose the benefits it gives you. My dear, you are practically superhuman. Of course, my boost does have a regrettable tendency to burn up the host body, hence the new flush to the skin, but the various tech implants should balance that out.
How long will she last?
How long have any of us got? She'll certainly outlast me. Not you too, if your ghost is to be believed.
Why have you done all this?
Anne stared at Finn with her golden Hayden man eyes.
Why is it so important to you that I live?
To prove that even monsters aren't monsters all of the time.
I miss James. I want James. Make me another.
I think the people would know he was a clone this time.
Not for them. Make another James for me.
I'll see what I can do.
Finn was lying. He was wise enough to know that Anne needed a reason to go on living, but still selfish enough to want that reason to be him. A part of him was quietly sad that she couldn't see the lengths he'd gone to, just for her.
I'm tired of the pain, of the changes, of not being human.
The boost will change that, and there are still many useful things you can do with your life. Perhaps I should let Douglas know what's happened to you. He might like to come and visit.
Yes, I'd like to see Douglas again. One last time.
Deathstalker Coda, Armies and Forces Gathering Strength, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, Simon R. Green. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. performed by Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Corey James, M.B. Van Dorn, Sonny Lasky, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savar, Bruce Rauscher, James Konacek, Tess Rowan, Chris Rowan, Jeff Baker, Peter Stray, Thomas Penny, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, Karen Carbone, Barbara Pinolini, Michael Replogel, Thomas Penny, and Mort Shelby. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Dan Smith. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. The Deathstalker Coda theme was composed by Dan Smith. Additional original music by Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed Deathstalker Coda, be sure to look for the Serrano Legacy, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Withdrawn.
It has receded.
Tsunami. It's a tsunami.
Run.
Working on a dig on the southern coast of India, the last thing Anya Creed expects is to be hit by a tsunami or to strike archaeological gold.
Hey, look what I found.
Let me see that. It appears to be a mechanism of some sort.
Is it gold?
I believe so, yes.
Anya watched as Lochata's fingers found the hidden release inside the egg-shaped device. The device split open like the sections of an orange to reveal the figurine inside. It was a woman, at least from the waist up. But below the waist, she was a snake. Anya is driven to discover the source of the relics at the bottom of the sea. Unfortunately, she isn't the only one interested in the mysterious artifacts.
Where is Anya Creed? If someone does not tell me where this woman is, I'm going to set your ship on fire and kill every person aboard it.
I'm here.
Miss Creed, I am Rajiv Shivaji. Do you still have the figurines?
No.
I don't believe you. Do you really want me to kill all those people because you like me?
No.
Master Rajiv! Look! It's the Coast Guard!
They've underestimated me, Miss Creed, and they're about to pay for that.
Taken hostage by the pirate Shivaji, Anya finds herself on a river deep in the Indian jungle.
You know about Kumari Kandam?
It was a mythical kingdom out in the Indian Ocean.
Not mythical. Once it was very real. A proud and fierce people lived there for a long time, and they amassed a vast fortune. As the island began to sink, the people abandoned their city and fled to the mainland. They took the contents of the treasure room with them.
There!
There! Men! Pull to shore!
We must find a throne room. That's where the treasure is supposed to be kept.
But the deserted ruin isn't deserted, and the residents don't like strangers. Rogue Angel number 10, Serpent's Kiss.
Indeed, death to the Americans. The United States supported Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The Americans helped the Shah stay on his peacock throne to oppress and defile the people of Iran. Some of you were but children when the Savak carried innocent people away to be tortured and murdered. Yet, God is great. You smote the American pawn in Iran. You began the Islamic holy war against the great Satan. Saddam Hussein carried it forward. Saddam's armies fought the infidel nations of the West. God is good, for now we take holy war to the Americans!
A sudden wave of global terrorism has all the hallmarks of an Islamic jihad.
Stony Man goes on red alert to determine if these atrocities are state-sponsored, carried out to draw the U.S. into full-scale war.
So Horan has poison in his veins. I assume that means he won't give up and will sacrifice as many lives as possible if he thinks there's no way out.
Major Horan carries death inside him. He will spread death as if a contagious disease. I think he wants to do this. Death is Horan's only concept of victory.
And he's gonna get a personal victory. And his last.
Oh, this neighborhood seems to be getting worse.
I noticed.
Your hand grenade seems to have made an impression on them. Maybe another one will discourage them from rushing the building.
Let's see what two will do.
Able Team, Phoenix Force, and Mac Bolan join forces across the globe as Armageddon is about to become a reality.
I hate to harp on this, but they've probably got vats of chlorine, cyanide, various types of acid, and maybe tanks of concentrated hydrogen and oxygen gases.
Meaning we can get poisoned, blown up, and burned to a crisp all at once if we're not careful.
We're trying not to hit anything with bullets. I just hope nobody inside is suicidal.
Join the warriors of Stony Man Farm in an action-packed race against time in Stony Man Number 4.
You don't object to murder?
Not murder. Justice.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.